SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Thursday. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. And the Thursday here before Belmont Stakes Day and Belmont Stakes Racing Festival, which starts today, and two nice stakes, actually three. We've got to throw in the two-year-old fillies, the Astoria, but the Intercontinental and the Wonder again, and kind of under a bit of a weather watch given a seemingly delayed arrival of the storm that was supposed to come through Thursday, get it out of the way, etc. Well, it seems like it's about 8 to 12 hours behind schedule. And as a result, we've got, you know, we're kind of surrounded by some not heavy storms, but, you know, we just had a little passing shower. The biggest stuff that was supposed to come through actually dove south and ended up out on Long Island, and other fairly significant thunderstorm, heavy weather ended up jogging north. So right now it's dodging us, and that would be ideal, but there's going to be some off and on rain into tomorrow. A lot of it might arrive after the races today, and that would help. And of course it doesn't necessarily assist that we have a 3 o'clock post today that starts the action. It would have been actually better had things started at 1 and gotten out of here. The post times for the Intercontinental, 5:43, 6:45 for the Wonder again, and the Phillies, they'll run whether it's sloppy or not, 6:15. And of course this integrates with a very good card at Churchill as well. Tomorrow, same thing. You've got some of the Churchill action when it comes to the Fox show. So we're keeping an eye on that, and I don't think there's any major risk of races, at least the stakes, off the turf at all. There is three other races, the 2nd, 4th, and 9th, that are scheduled for the grass. So keep an eye on this, and I you know, we're going to get something. Doesn't seem like we're as, you know, we're as good a shape as it seemed yesterday at this time. But Saturday remains ideal, and we'll deal with whatever comes. Well, speaking, and before we get involved with the regular activities for Thursday, which is going to include a Nick Tamaro visit, even ahead of him being here in person tomorrow. I wanted Nick to come in and spend time. We're going to spend about 20 minutes. He's on his way to New York later this morning. But I want to go through the two-day wagers and get a, you know, framework. Let's get a foundation toward the two-day races Friday, Saturday, and the pick six, the pick four, and the four doubles. Don't want to wait until tomorrow to do that. All right. So this way you'll hear it now, and then if you need to hear it again in the morning, you'll have an angle on it. Dick Powell will join us. Of course, it's Derby weekend as well abroad, but we'll catch some HKJC with Dick and some more. And Mike Welch, I don't know if he's going to come down and join us from the press box, but at the very worst, we'll talk to Mike upstairs. Dave O'Rourke, president of NYRA, is going to join us in the third hour, most likely 11:30. It's been the last half hour. We'll catch up on a lot of the topics. We always have one of these, you know, state of the association visits over the years, and that goes back a long ways. So Dave O'Rourke, we'll find out more about, you know, where things stand in terms of some planning and this facility and aqueduct and plans for upstate, and I haven't even talked about the hockey arena yet this week. It's pretty magnificent. I know some people are ambivalent and or less about the addition of the Islanders UBS arena. There's a design feature in that arena that is remarkably cool, which I'll put a picture up when I get a chance. Anyway, so there's your lineup. Papo's going to swing through. We'll get some Friday opinions on Forum to Win, and there will be a 4 o'clock Twitch with Papo as well later this afternoon. All right? To the news, and as referenced yesterday, the first portion of what transpired regarding Bob Baffert and Medina Spirit and the split sample, as I mentioned yesterday, when, you know, word began to circulate that the split sample came back and confirmed the initial test. That part, I don't think, was any element of surprise, or, you know, would have been more of a surprise if the split, you know, didn't come back confirming the initial test. The bigger story, obviously, became Churchill Downs' reaction to the news, and they obviously had prepared this response well in advance of the announcement and the confirmation of the split sample. And Churchill Downs Incorporated suspending Baffert from any involvement at their tracks, and of course Churchill Fairgrounds, and for as long as they're still involved, Arlington. But obviously the most important portion of this is the barring of Baffert trainees from the Derby the next 2 years, and it is a very significant penalty and punishment for behavior, as we've outlined, you know, throughout this whole 3 weeks, that was irresponsible and inappropriate. And I don't think there's not a single logical defense in view of the calendar year of positives from the barn. And the part that to me was the most egregious element of this was the failure to follow through on the promise at Breeders' Cup last year to put in place better management controls to stop exactly what happened from happening. And to me, whether the horse received a betamethasone treatment, which has been categorically denied, or whether the positives came from the topical ointment, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. There was no margin for error. I hate to use a trite maxim that I've trotted out over the years: when you're walking on eggs, don't hop. And it just, you know, I expect that there's going to be, you know, legal wrangling, and, you know, every avenue will be taken to try to, you know, defend Medina Spirit's victory. But it should be a foregone conclusion, and realize that, you know, assuming that the suspension holds up, and you know, there's a whole bunch of, and we're not going to spend, you know, the big portions of today and tomorrow discussing those legalities, and you know that there's going to be plenty of, you know, time and reaction to all of that, you know, about whether, you know, a suspension of this ilk will hold up. You know, the racetracks have this avenue at their disposal. It's not a new practice or concept, but this is a scenario that Bob Baffert will have to really think long and hard about what this means, because his principal goal every year is the classics, and notably the Derby, and his client base is designed around the acquisition of classic prospects. So this is a severe and serious, and frankly, given Gamine's positive in the Oaks last year and Medina Spirits in the Derby this year, it's completely understandable and justifiable and appropriate. And you know, I've seen people say he got off easy. I've seen people say that how could they possibly do that? So, you know, it's over the top. This is Churchill Downs's principal raison d'etre and the centerpiece of their existence, and they're not going to have it sullied. It's too late a little bit for that, obviously, but the whole thing, as I said yesterday when it came up, I mean, beyond disappointing and maddening, the worst part, or the most just difficult portion, is that it was completely avoidable, and just, you know, more responsible barn management and attention to detail, everything that was promised last October around Breeders' Cup with great fanfare, and then was, you know, promptly forgotten about. And so, you know, the ramifications are in evidence, and there's, you know, there's also been people say, well, it's a long time coming, and those kinds of, you know, that portion of it is tough to, you know, necessarily frame, because, you know, part of the backdrop of this, in fact, I saw Jason Blewett is in town with his new role with West Point, and we were talking about it. You know, I said, what was my thoughts? And, you know, one of the backdrops of all this is the reminder that in California, that if Gamine if the Gamine situation and Medina Spirit happens in the Santa Anita Oaks and Santa Anita Derby, it's a $500 fine, no forfeiture of purse, no suspension, no nothing, just $500 fine. So with that in mind, in fact, yesterday, as it happens, the new head of HISA, Charles Sheeler, they had a press conference scheduled anyway that just happened to coincide with this news. And if you haven't seen Sheeler's comments, they're encouraging, and they make perfect sense. And he talks about that element of this, and you know, the patchwork nature of the medication rules. And if if HESA is going to happen, if they can unify that, you know, even faster than the model rules efforts did, then that'll be, if nothing else happens, and I'm sure other things will, but if nothing else happens, that'll go a long way. And he also brought up, I thought, a very germane point about having a unified reaction to situations like this and providing a, you know, a vocal personification to the public, because that's been, you know, that's been a problem here that, you know, has gone unaddressed and has just let, you know, has just let whatever dialogue or reaction just go in every which direction. I mean, the public does not, you know, the general public, I mean, all of us that are involved in the game, we understand what a, you know, what a therapeutic med is, and we can differentiate that discussion. Public can't. And, you know, for instance, you know, headlines, illegal medication. Not an illegal medication. It's a legal med. It's applied inappropriately in proximity too close to race, to racing. And we understand that. Doesn't make it acceptable on our part, but to the broad public, I mean, it's a runaway train. So let's turn our attention to some handicapping and what is going to be two and a half, three days of good racing, exciting racing. Nick Tamaro joins us. Nick is going to be here tomorrow to do flesh out the Saturday card with me in detail, but I absolutely wanted everybody to have a framework approaching the two-day wagering. Nick, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How you doing?
Excellent, and looking forward to having you here. But let's give everybody a primer on this, Nick. These are not bets that you're going to do tomorrow on the fly. They've got to be planned out. They've got to be budgeted, and it also ideally helps everybody with their approach for, you know, the individual races and the shorter multi-race sequences. And the whole thing starts with the True North, and there's already an issue to deal with there, Nick, because Kelly Breen, I've got some things to say later about Kelly. We talked about the Monmouth, the jock situation and the crop, but he is a little on edge about heavy rain if it comes, because he really does not want to run Firenze if it's a sea of slop.
Yeah, I mean, this race is supposed to run at 4 o'clock tomorrow. The forecast has been all over the place. You know, hopefully, if not, there's not any kind of significant rain. But I think that, as usually is the case, after a weekend like last weekend when there was so much rain and it really negatively affected the racing product, I think everybody's just a little, everybody has a tendency to get nervous. So I hope that's not something that we have to deal with. Obviously, if he comes out of the True North, it alters the race significantly because he's the deserving favorite and, you know, really just continues to deliver, surprisingly so, as he's getting older. And Belmont's generally been his favorite racetrack. We've seen him run well in this particular race. Last year, I thought he ran credibly on multiple occasions at Belmont, including Carter, obviously the only exception, but he doesn't care for a wet track. You know, this is an interesting sprint race because there's really not a lot of speed. And Kendrick Carmouche seems to get very cute with American Power and thinks that it's a good idea to back the pace down and invite other horses into the race. And so I fear that he's going to try and do something like that. Again, I wish there was more speed because I'd really love to bet Batman, who I think ended up on a negative inside on Derby Day and really was the only horse on the dirt prior to the Kentucky Derby that made a prolonged bid along the rail. And I thought he ran very well. I also like looking at Bikinis. I'm going to use those two to start it. And I'm going to hope that Firenze Fire runs and just try and take a little bit of a shot against him in terms of the A line, but I'm going to use him definitely as a backup.
All right, so we're going to talk looking at Bikinis and Fat Man as the A's.
Yeah, I'm going to try and get a little value there to kick it off. I thought Looking at Bikinis last race was very good. This is a horse that's always hinted at having serious ability. The biggest problem with Looking at Bikinis is his awful name. But he's otherwise been a pretty consistent horse. He's been a consistent horse in the right environment. I think that this is now the right opportunity for him to get back into Preakness Stakes company.
Firenze is a B or a third A?
No, I'm going to use him as a B. I'm going to make him a backup. I think the rail is a negative for Friendly Fire. I think that could be a bit of a problem. And I'm wondering if American Power does get out and looking at Bikinis is kind of latched onto him from the outside, if that might put him in a tough spot. I'll take a stand against Flagstaff. I know Bango came back and ran very well in the Aristides, but he also got a 90 figure. He didn't exactly take a step forward. And I thought that the Flagstaff won a race that really, I mean, literally you could have thrown a blanket over that field to finish.
Interesting. All right. No C's at all. We're going to
not go. No,
all right. Very good. The New York, and, you know, I think we can assume at least a little bit of yielding. I mean, the turf courses took a lot of moisture. There hasn't been a designation set yet this morning, but there is going to be some, you know, some more rain by the time this race runs at 5:15. This is a nice field, and I think there's some very evident A types, and you know, I don't know if you want to go very far and too deep either, Nick. I think you want to try to lean on you know, the three most likely winners and save some ammunition. Of course, we should note this is a 20-cent wager, so you do have a little bit of leeway.
Yeah, I think you just have to figure out who the three most likely winners are. That's the real challenge. I thought this was an extremely tough race, and I'm going to take a little bit of a shot in here with Civil Union, who ran it. I actually did not realize that how well Civil Union ran in the Breeders' Cup last year. She got into pretty significant trouble around the turn and was still running on late. That was a race that was collapsing gradually through the stretch, so I don't want to overrate her performance, but I thought she was just a complete no-show before I watched the replay, and she ran better than I expected. So in her comeback race, she made a big wide move in a very slow-paced bogey and shortened up late. And I feel like that was just a jumping off point. I think that Chigwigehi is the kind of trainer that would absolutely use a race like that for a prep for this kind of race. And she's going to be a big price. So I'd rather have her than a lot of the other horses in here that are going to go off much shorter prices. There should be a real pace in here with Mean Mary, Antoinette, and Traipsing. And that should really set the table for horses coming from off of it. I've been a huge Harvey's Little Goyal fan, but I mean, I'm nervous about a mile and a quarter and her holding off some of these, you know, fast finishing Euro types like Magic Attitude and Virginia Joy, who look like they're going to be major threats in the stretch. So I wish I had a more, I guess, defined opinion and was able to narrow this field down more. But I mean, I'm going to use some combination of the 1, 2, 5, and 6 as A's, and I'll use quite a slew of backups as well, including Micheline, even though she probably prefers a firmer turf course. We'll see just how much rain ends up falling. And I'll use Thundering Knights as a backup. Joey O'Brien sending a couple of horses in for the Friday card. Both, of course, the one that we're going to talk about in a minute, Baron Samedi, looks to be extremely tough to beat. But Thundering Knights has win credentials. And I'll use Muta Makina as well, thinking that she ran a good race off the layoff behind Magic Attitude in the Sheepshead Bay and should actually benefit a little bit from the shortening up to a mile and a quarter.
1, 2, 5, 6 with some 3, 9, 11 in the New York. The third leg on Friday of the 20-cent two-day pick six is the Belmont Gold Cup. You referenced Baron Samedi had a fabulous hour yesterday with Ron Anderson, and Ron feels like Graham Motion and the Wertheimer's Ziad, and Baron Samedi will get people through if they want to try to keep it narrow.
Yeah, I mean, Ziad's last performance was disgraceful. He had a perfect trip along the inside. He got out in the upper stretch, and he got out finished by so high. So I don't know if this horse is necessarily going to benefit from more distance. He seems like a Euro with a really compact run, and I wouldn't use him for a nickel in this race, but Baron Samedi looks to me like he's just way the horse to beat. This field stinks. I mean, there's just no other way to put it. This is dumb bunch for 400K, but at least they got Baron Samedi to come in, and I would actually, the other horse I would use is a Journey to Freedom. He feels like a horse to me that's going to kind of run all day, and I think he might actually benefit from not bottomless ground, but obviously turf that's a little on the softer side. You know, of course, what's going to happen is we're going to talk about soft turf, and there's not going to be a drop of rain. So we'll end up figuring that out before we make the bet, obviously. But I think this is a time where, depending on what some of your opinions look like on Saturday, if you want to get a little bullish and you want to loan a Baron Samedi and maybe have a couple of backups, you can do that, because it doesn't look like this is a very contentious race at all.
Any interest in Nacho with Fantasioso?
He's a little interesting. It looks like he's going to have to improve quite a bit to me, but I think he could, you know, if you like him, you could definitely use him as a backup.
move to Saturday, and we start with the Jiper. And you know, you mentioned, it's so funny, we got these sprint races. We're not going to have to worry about a lack of speed in the Woody Stevens, but beyond the True North, here is the first half or the second half, first race, the Jiper, and they're really, for a turf sprint, there's a dearth of speed.
It's almost frightening. But yeah, I was very, very surprised to see just how short this race was on speed. And, you know, it seems like 2 months ago we were talking about the Shakertown and how much speed was in that race, and that our thought, at least talking about it the day before, was that Bounce for Nowhere would be a casualty of the pace. And he ended up breaking poorly, and, you know, in a way that only Joel Rosario can. He rode him so perfectly and was extremely patient the whole way around there before getting up just in time over Imprimis. And now it looks like Down for Nowhere, with a return to the normal tactics, has a huge tactical edge on this field. He's just a lot faster than any of them early, and I would envision him getting a very, very good trip on the front end and being extremely tough to beat from there. So I'm going to use him, and I'm going to use Gregorian Chant. I know that taking West Coast turf form on the eastern part of the country is not always the best idea, but I don't think this is a standard type of situation. It's a turf sprint, so it's a little different. How good has this horse run in his last few starts?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's overcome slow paces. He's beaten horses like Bombard and Sombier, who are real horses. And he's the one to me that you kind of want in terms of a late runner in a slow pace race, because he's kind of been there, done that. And so I'm going to use him as well. I'm going to find a way to use Stubbins and Sombier as backups, because Stubbins actually ran very well in this race a year ago. It was a completely different circumstance where the pace was very fast, and Luis Saez actually moved him a little too early, and he was just not going to be able to make a prolonged bid from off of that kind of pace. You know, there are a lot of other horses that I think Casa Creed's a really cool horse. I think six is probably a little too short for him, especially in a slow pace race. And I've always been an Alexandra fan, but she looks like she's off form, and this is some jockey change. So I'm going to keep it simple and use the 6 and 8 as mains and back up with Stubbins and Sobier.
Well, the Gregorian Chant came up heavily with Ron Anderson yesterday, and he's got no reason to laud that one, at least from a personal business standpoint, because Luis Saez is not his rider, but he absolutely agreed that Gregorian Chant was the interesting price in the Jiper. That gets us to the Met, and Nick's Go is going to come in here with a lot of steam. But I'll tell you, there's some solid types in here that have got credentials, and I'm sure budgets are going to lean heavily on Nick's Go, but there's certainly some horses to consider as, with some format.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's going to take a performance that is better than most of what these horses have ever run to beat Nick's Go if he shows up with that, the kind of standard Nick's Go performance. But at the same time, Silver State to me is a horse that has really the potential to excel going around one turn, and in limited opportunities around one turn, he's nearly unblemished, including a couple of very solid performances from a speed figure perspective, albeit against much lesser horses. But, this is a horse who also has a nose for the wire, and there's something to be said for that. This is also a barn that knows how to win this race. So I thought it was very interesting that they were opting to shorten him up and run here, knowing, of course, the potential that it has for his future. Now, otherwise, he was a horse that made a lot of sense going to a race like the Stephen Foster. So I'm excited to see Silver State try Nick's Go. And Mischievous Alex, the thing that, and I don't know if anybody's touched on this, but if you have Mike Welsh on at any point, I'm going to be very interested in what he has to say, because he tweeted frequently after Mischievous Alex workouts at Gulfstream and was not positive about them. He seemed to think that he is not training as well as he did before the Carter, and I wouldn't put it past this barn to have maybe tried to relax a little bit on the training, but this is a horse that, since he got into Savvy Joseph Jr.'s care, he has trained exceptionally well before all both of the Gulfstream starts and the Carter, and so you get a little concern that maybe if he's not quite as good as he was in the Carter, and he has the rail, and it's a mile versus seven, that becomes enough of a concern to try an alternative, and I think Silver State is the right one to me. I know that Brad Cox feels like Nick's Go is better around two turns. I don't necessarily know if I agree with that. I think that generally speed horses are better around two turns. I wouldn't If he's basing that opinion on the Saudi Cup, I think that's unfair. He could easily end up being right. So I'm interested to see how it unfolds. I think Dr. Post's figure in the Westchester is about 6 to 8 points high. So anybody thinking that he kind of at least measures up to them from a speed figure perspective, I would just take that figure with a little bit of a grain of salt. But look, I mean, there's no doubt that he improved first off the layoff for Pletcher, which is no great surprise, and the fact that that he could take a step forward certainly exists.
Well, the horse that we should at least mention is, by my standards, who from a performance level standpoint, second off the break here off that Oaklawn Mile win, and I thought this was a very smart exit ramp to take instead of running at Lone Star on Monday.
Yeah, I mean, and they could have run the Steve Sexton Mile over a dry track, and it still would have been the right decision. Right, it was a good move on Brett Calhoun's part, and you know, the potential of this race, and I didn't make comments about the field size because I'm just a jerk. I'm going to be a jerk no matter what. But the potential that you have in terms of your horse winning this race is so huge that's why you'd think more people would try. You know, my issue with By My Standards is that when he has won, the trips have been very soft, the paces have been very soft, and he's been able to kind of control stalking on the outside, probably prior to the Oaklawn Mile where he faced a little bit more adversity. But, you know, he was running down Rushy at a mile at Oaklawn, which is a place where he's run well. So I just feel like if you're going to take a horse that needs to elevate his game, I'd rather have Silver State than By My Standards. Now, the difference, of course, is that Silver State is probably going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of half the price of By My Standards. So there's reason to believe that he has a shot. And, you know, either way, win, lose, or draw, it was definitely the right decision by Calhoun and his camp. And this is a horse that, you know, continues to fire on multiple occasions. It at least looked in the Oaklawn Mile like he rebounded from a couple of bad performances then in 2020.
So Silver State and Knicks Go as A's, and I guess what, as many as you care to back up?
I mean, I'll probably use everybody else as a backup, maybe with the exception of Lexus.
I thought that was I agree that that was a likely approach. That gets us to the Belmont, where the first order of business here was the 2-day, 20-cent pick six, and three on Friday, three on Saturday. Belmont opinion.
You know, the Belmont this year is kind of it's sort of the ultimate good bad race, right? There's not a lot of depth to it, but there's enough depth among the eights that are in there to give you a decent opportunity, I think, to make some money. I like Hot Rod Charlie. I think Hot Rod Charlie is going to get the right kind of trip. I think that Flavian Pratt's going to get him out of the gate, look to his right, and if he sees Rosario really pushing Rock Your World hard, I think he's going to take up that outside stalking spot with alacrity. And I think he'll be in a very, very good spot from there. And I think he'll have a tactical advantage on some of the deeper closers like Essential Quality and Known Agenda. And for me, you know, the horses that I mainly want in my multi-race plays are Rombauer and Hot Rod Charlie. And my thought on Rombauer is that I think that we're going to reach a point middle to late part of this year where we are talking about the Kentucky Derby, and we come to the conclusion that it wasn't a particularly strong race. It brought together the horses that were ready at that point in time, but, you know, outside of maybe the top four, there was really little to no depth in it, and they ended up being four horses stretched across the track in kind of a ho-hum final quarter and a race in general from a speed figure perspective. So Essential Quality is going to get absolutely pounded in the wagering in this race. He's going to go off less than 2-1. And I know that it's because Brad Cox thought that he was the Belmont winner from the first time he saw him train. I've heard that about 740 times. And, you know, it's like, okay, well, right. And somebody probably saw a 2-year-old that ended up running for 15 that they thought could win the Belmont too. So Brad Cox's opinion is a little bit better than theirs, but that means absolutely nothing. So Rombauer, to me, kind of, I love the way they campaigned him in the sense that they skipped the Derby with an eye towards getting, you know, kind of coming in through the back door. And, I mean, if this horse wins the Belmont, he is now by so far and away the leader of this division from an Eclipse Award perspective. I think he's the one that you kind of want because you just want a stranger. And he's still a little bit of a stranger because the only race where he has any kind of, where he exposed his form a little bit was the Preakness, and he ran great. Right, so to me, that's just that's the angle that I want to play. I understand. I know people like Known Agenda. My thought on Known Agenda is that he's very slow. That's my problem. His figures are slow. he got himself. Todd Pletcher's been telling everybody that the horse had all kinds of trouble in the Derby. He really had self-made trouble because he doesn't have any speed. You know, Irad is like pumping and driving on him out of the gate to try and get him into position, and he doesn't have any speed, and so he lost his position. And I know that Belmont is a more forgiving race for a horse that doesn't have speed, but you know, you don't want to be three or four lengths off of gallopers like Hot Rod Charlie and Rockford World and be heads up with Essential Quality with a half mile to go if you're Known Agenda. I don't think you have much of a chance from there. So I also am very concerned that this horse is only two good races at Gulfstream. And that's a worry of mine. I would understand maybe using him as a backup. I couldn't use him as much more than that, if even that. And the other three runners in the field, to me, just don't look like they could win under any circumstance.
So we're going to use Ron Bauer and Hot Rod Charlie as the A's and Essential.
And Rock Your World as B's.
2-7. So 3-4, 2-7. Very good. My price play in terms of having something underneath is Overtook, who I think is, with the addition of the blinkers, is just going to gallop around there and is going to be third at 27-1. So,
well, you know, it's a good point that you bring that up, because I mean, Todd Pletcher's had immense success in this race, and one of the reasons why is that he understands how this race generally unfolds. And when you think about Destin and Commissioner, Caprit to an extent, and I know Destin and Commissioner, neither of them won, but and Palace Malice had speed to begin with, but they all showed appreciably more speed than they had recently. And one of these horses, and it's going to be interesting to me because none of them have any speed, but one of these horses is going to get ridden out of the gate. I assume it's going to be Known Agenda, and he's going to try and get Irad to get him more interested and involved in the race early. Because it's very hard in the Belmont to make up a significant amount of ground. And I know that I kind of made a fool of myself with Sir Winston 2 years ago, saying after the Peter Pan that he didn't have much chance. I mean, you got to understand the context of the race. Sir Winston ran in a fast-paced Belmont, sat on a gold rail, and got one of the all-time great rides. So, you know, in general, the Belmont's a galloper's race where you need to be close. And, I mean, if you're not within a length or so, length and a half at the pace call, good luck.
Yeah, exactly. And there's always a horse that invariably, you know, runs well in this race, doesn't have to necessarily win. There have been some that have done it and won, but there's always a horse whose pedigree and style just end up suiting it, and even though they looked slow in all their previous races, they managed to, you know, plug along for a mile and a half. There you go. So there's your pick six look, the 20-cent pick six for the 2 days. And really on the A front, 5-7 with 1-2-5-6, with 8, with 6-8, with 3-6, with 3-4. And I'll put this together, and obviously we'll talk more when Nick is here in person tomorrow. Nick, in you know, given that we got those six races covered, all we have to do is really add or fill in a couple of blanks. You know, we talked to True North. This, when it comes to the sprint double, hooks up with the Woody Stevens. Quick Woody Stevens thought.
You know, I actually am going to take a small shot with Nova Rags. I think that that he's going to be the right kind of price in terms of the field itself. But I don't have any kind of strong opinion against Jackie's Warrior. So I'm going to use Nova Rags and Jackie's Warrior primarily. I'll use Caddo River and Dream Shake as backups. Drain the Clock will beat me. He's not. I don't think he's nearly good enough to beat these kind of horses.
Delaine Trist will be running late, actually. Quick glance at the Filly and Mare double, the Better Roses, which is a really well-matched set. And unless you think Chub Wagon is absolutely bona fide and is just, you know, kind of obscured by, you know, by her campaign and her connections.
Yeah, I don't. I don't think she's any kind of standout. And if you look at any measurable speed figure, she's not at all. So these are much better horses than she ran against on Preakness Day. And she's the advantage she has, of course, is that she's clearly the lone speed. So I hope that Irad doesn't try this you know, rating thing again. It worked that day because he kind of stashed her on the live inside, and then she popped outside and was just better than everybody she was against. But Estilo Talentoso and Pacific Gale and Victim of Love are real horses. And I'll tell you what, Byronis is not far off. And Lake Avenue, if she bounces back off of just an inexplicably awful performance, then she's a contender too. So this is a deep field. If you're playing this wager, I think the best thing to do here is choose who you like in the Acorn. I like Day Out of the Office, but Search Results to me is without question the horse to beat. If I was playing this double, I would just try and play a couple of horses that will offer value in the better roses, like Victim of Love and Pacific Gale and Estilo Talentoso, and play them into Day Out of the Office and just, you know, try and get a little aggressive there.
And this is probably going to have the lowest handle of these doubles, but it's funny. I'm glad you said that, because I was trying to figure out my own, you know, how I wanted to do it. And it might just be a place to, you know, try a, you know, $10, $20 kind of a double, and instead of spreading, kind of zero in and take a swing. The pick four, the $2 pick four, what you don't have to necessarily go through this, because we've already talked the New York and the Gold Cup, the Belmont, so maybe just a Manhattan thought. But what is your the high price tag version of these bets? This is going to be really well received. It got a great response when we introduced it and they announced it. What's your budget approach? Let me ask you that.
I think you got to maximize your opinions in here. And to me, I mean, two of the more obvious winners of the weekend, looking at it right now, I could of course feel differently in 72 hours, are Baron Samedi and Domestic Spending. And so that's kind of how you have to play this bet. I think you have to be very open in the New York, and then single those two and get the live to who you like in the Belmont, because New York to me is the most wide open stake of the weekend, and the Manhattan and the Belmont Gold Cup are probably the two most open and shut, because I don't think Domestic Spending can lose the Manhattan. I thought he was sensational at Churchill, and I think the mile and a quarter really only goes in his favor. Fast-paced race also will help him. So I think that's how you kind of have to play it. And obviously with the $2 price point, you can't be spready, right? Otherwise, you're going to spend a lot of money very quickly. And that's, of course, what you want to avoid.
I love it. And then really everything else has been covered. The other two doubles are the New York, the New York and Met Mile, and we talked the New York approach and the Met approach, and then the Belmont Gold Cup, Belmont Stakes double, where Baron Samedi and maybe a little, you know, maybe a little sprinkling of C's and the Belmont. So there you go. There's your 2-day pick six, 2-day pick four, and the four doubles. Use that as a primer, as your base, and we'll add in any final thoughts about those bets tomorrow when Nick is here, and then we'll really go through the card, particularly the Saturday card, with you in person.
Can't wait. Looking forward to it. Thanks for having me.
Nick, I appreciate it. Safe travels, and we will see you here tomorrow, one of the in fact, I was going through, and I was curious to see which of the assortment of NTAM cohorts. I've got about six different pictures, different combinations with Philly Joe and with Jonathan and all different. Pat one time was I got a one wide angle shot. Which is frequently necessary, and there he is, Angel Cordero, coming by. He's going to circle over. Maybe we'll grab Angel when we get a chance, but can't wait to see Nick tomorrow. It's been a very meager track apron, let's put it that way. So safe travels. Nick Tamaro, everybody. NTAM 1215. Thanks, Nick. I was just sort of vamping as Deja reaches for Dick Powell to join us. And the reason Deja is in, Casey had an accident yesterday. And by all rights, it really was unfortunate, because it was a special day. He closed on a house yesterday. And it was a great day until it wasn't, when car's ruined. He's got a big SUV type of thing. But he banged his he banged his head or his angel. He's having a vision. They held him overnight in the hospital, and so thanks to Deja for the quick response. And you know, things have been so much better. We haven't really talked about it, but you know, Casey finished his treatment, his cycles. You know, with the lymphoma. And has been terrific, you know, all the problems that were, you know, that sort of accompanied that. And, you know, the close on the house at 12:30 and at, I don't know, it must have been 6 o'clock when he sent me, or he called. Deja called me, actually. Casey texted me, and then Deja called and gave me the update. So quick recovery for Case, and thanks to Deja for the, you know, the emergency response to jump into the chair to push the buttons. Dick Powell standing by now. We'll talk to Lenny Shulman at the top of the hour, by the way, and Lenny's got his new book coming out at the end of the month, and we'll touch on that. But we'll also we're seeing about scaring up Steve Haskin. We're trying to rouse Haskin to a visit, if he's amenable. Later, Mike Welch, mentioned Papo, and Dave O'Rourke is going to be here as well. So there's the rest of the morning. And Dick, good morning.
Steve, how are you?
I'm good. You know, down here and kind of sweating out this weather pattern, and hope it has minimal impact between now and tomorrow.
Yeah, definitely. Can I give you a very quick my opinion on how the Bafford situation should be?
Absolutely. I was gonna ask you on the back end, but go ahead and lead.
I wasn't sure if you're gonna bring it up, so sure. I figured I'd get it out. And this is coming from me. World-class consultant to the star. Everyone wants my opinion. My answer is Bob's punishment should be, seeing that his supervision and oversight of the barn has been less than stellar and less than what he claimed he would be, my punishment for Bob would be every day he has to sign in at the barn at 5:30 in the morning and be there to oversee personally the entire operation of the barn. And in all stake races out of town, he cannot watch them from his couch, but he has to fly with the horse and be there to oversee.
That's interesting, and I don't know, you know, I don't know how necessarily that could be implemented per se, but you know, who, you know, this gets into the whole responsibility, administrative element, and you know, one of the things in the wake of Churchill's suspension is, you know, and the fact that Naira, you know, had said that they were not going to allow him to participate here, and they would wait for a you know, outcome, and obviously the outcome regarding you know, the KHRC and how they administer these kinds of things. I mean, that's got a long way to play out. But what's going to be very much a wait and watch and see is how the other major racetrack organizations respond. And, you know, one part of this, Dick, that just thinking about Breeders' Cups, I mean, people realize that if there was a Breeders' Cup at Churchill, you know, this year or next, that it would bar him from participation there as well. So there's a lot of moving parts, and there's, you know, the response of Stronach Group as well. You know, we'll see what, you know, obviously they've got you know, they're putting in a very interesting position. I was going to say awkward, but you know, at the same time, as I mentioned earlier, the betamethasone positive there in California is a fine. So, you know, from if you want to talk about a jurisdiction view, I suppose that they've got leeway on that front. You know, this is more a habit and practice and you know, kind of a penalty to me than I saw where Matt Hegarty actually invoked the Dutrow, the way the Dutrow suspension was handled. You know, that it was a set of nebulous, you know, loosely defined offenses. You know, this is more defined and specific to the five incidents over the calendar year. So this has got a long way to play out.
Well, I'm always doing research. And it fascinates me that we constantly compare ourselves to Europe, especially Great Britain, even though they do not test every race that they conduct, which is true to this day. Now, they're getting better, and they keep bragging about how they're getting better, but they're nowhere near the amount of testing that we do. So now I'm looking through the British Horse Racing Authority website, and I can't even find betamethasone. I can find dexamethasone as a banned substance, or some you know, withdrawal time and thing like that, but I can't even find betamethasone. And the final thing is, like you just said, with the California, it's a fine, and some other places much, much more severe. I was involved, and as you know, when you would be at a HBPA convention, I always said at 10 o'clock, I got to get inside for the medication panel, which was just every year, just fantastic. Well, years ago, when this was evolving, RMTC set up these standards for withdrawals and threshold levels. And there was this weirdness to it that offended a lot of people, including the Dr. Barker from LSU and Dr. Tobin from University of Kentucky, where if you asked to see the science, like in other words, how is it 72 hours? How is it 7 days? How did you arrive at that point? You had to sign a confidentiality agreement and could never talk about it. So like when they pulled the curtain back and showed you their methodology of how they got to this point, then you weren't allowed to criticize it, say anything about it, whatever. And most of the people wouldn't do that. So the whole process had been set up, and I had advocated, well, while you're in this process of coming up with these days and threshold levels, how do you suspend and ban trainers who get positive for something that they might have completely followed the recommendation? And I'm not saying that's the case here, but the whole RMTC process left a ton to be desired. And I remember one of the conferences, at that point, Dionne Benson was the head of the RMTC, and she had a real hard time trying to explain the process because she was under some serious questioning from people that know what they're talking about. So it's been a mess. I read the Heiser quotes from what's the gentleman's name? Skeeler?
Charlie Skeeler.
I read them, and I hope those things can be done, but the problem is individual states, individual jurisdictions, you know, things, it's just various things like that. So, yes, that should be a long-term goal, that we can level this playing field. Everyone knows what the rules are going in, but I just think if you force Bob to show up at 5:30 in the morning, that might do it.
Well,
that's tongue in cheek.
Well, I can tell you from having spent plenty of mornings, you know, when I have to be at Clocker's Corner at 6, nobody's there earlier than Bill Spahr. That's number one. Spahr is actually, his work is done by like 6:30, but he's there from like 4 to 6. Mark Glatt, he's probably second after Spar. And, you know, there are mornings where I start seeing Baffert as early, really, as 6:37. And, you know, might not be as often as it used to be, but, you know, that's one of the luxuries of, you know, of having what you hope is responsible help. And you know, the part of this that's very really annoying is that, and why I say it's just so unnecessary, Dr. Baker has been their vet for years, and for whatever, you know, has triggered this, you know, this spate of sloppiness, you know, there was an extended period where there weren't any of these things. So it's not like, as a barn, they're not capable of you know, administering, you know, therapeutic meds successfully in proximity, in appropriate proximity to racing. And that's, and the point is, so that's true for so many other barns. I mean, that's really the point here. You know, and that's, you know, when I had that, you know, rather pointed response to this, I think I might have been in Baltimore, I guess we were in Baltimore, the, you know, to be as important and as high profile as the barn is, and to have, you know, had, you know, incidents, you would think that you'd double and triple and you know, ensure that you were insulated from any potential for a problem. That's what's just so just mind-blowing about this. And to have promised in October that there would be new oversight and you know, new commitment to, and then to just forget about it months later, I mean, that to me, that's egregious. That you were conscious of a problem and you promised to address it and then just didn't. And then repeated it in the most high-profile, most inappropriate, not that any, you know, any stake or any race of any ilk is appropriate, but, I mean, to step on your dick in that spot is just inexcusable. And so, you know, live with the repercussions.
And at the same track. You know, there was a problem in October, and you come back, you know, six, seven months later and have the same problem at the same track after promising to clean everything up. I mean,
Exactly.
Now we do have the Epsom Derby. So a segue into that is last year, Aidan O'Brien, world's greatest trainer, had sent 6, 7, 8 horses to France for the Arc de Triomphe, for the undercard, and all of them had to be scratched because they were going to test positive for a feed supplement that had something that would trigger a steroid test. And Aidan had to scratch everyone, obviously very embarrassed. French have good testing, so they came up with it. Apparently he used the same feed in Ireland, and it's never been an issue in Ireland, and for some reason in France it was. But we didn't have the end of the world narcissism of, oh, no, we're so bad, our racing is this and that. You know, some idiot runs on the court 5 feet into the baseline in the NBA game the other night. Oh, it's the end of the world, as we know. But you watch sports around the world, and you see how fans behave at sporting events around the world. We might be the best behaved of fans around the world. But so racing, oh, it's another nail in the coffin. I love the another black guy. That's I love that one. It's like, come on, wake up. Will you look around and see what else is going on?
That's a point I make. That's one of my favorite expressions, which is, you know, only in the United States. It's like, oh boy. You know, and the only in racing thing, which is just obviously also nonsense. In every sport and every endeavor, and when it comes to In fact, it's funny. I mentioned Jason Blewett before. Jason and I were talking about some things, industry, vexing industry issues, and I invoked that same thought, which is, in banking and in real estate and anywhere money's involved, there's going to be, if not blatant attempts to, skirt rules. And cheat, there's going to be, pressing every edge possible. I mean, people are looking for an edge in any walk of life. If in our game, I mean, there's money involved on the front end, the back end, and in the middle.
But it never used to happen, Steve. It was hell out some water for many years.
Yeah, there you go.
I moved here in 1984. One of the people I got to know tells me, oh yeah, every year so-and-so, Hall of Fame trainer, has me go over to Menzies and Curtis, which is the pharmacy on the corner of Broadway and Lake.
Yep.
And he has a list of things for me to buy because he can't buy them. I'm like, oh really? How about that? And that was 1984. I guess the demise had already started.
Yeah, exactly. The slippery slope. It's a long slope. You mentioned Dick. Let's shift gears. You mentioned the Derby, and any thoughts? I clipped a coupon about it, but I've been more concerned about these. These two good days of racing, Friday and Saturday.
Well, what's interesting this year is O'Brien is now only sending one horse. And in the past, he has sent four or five. He's even had his pacemaker hold on and go gate to wire and upset the race. He's so strong this year. He's sending one of them, high definition, is going to wait to the Irish Derby, and two others were going to France for the Prix de Jockey Club. So it tells me that he must really think the world of Bolshoi Boy, who looked spectacular winning his prep race. I think it was at York, and he just looked awesome. So apparently no setbacks, no bumps along the road. He's ready, and he's going in there on his own. So Aiden will have one horse in the Epsom Derby, and he will probably be heavy bet. The rest of the field, I haven't printed it out yet. I haven't looked that closely. Tomorrow's the Epsom Oaks, and there was some crazy thing at the last second with one of the horses. When Aiden made that decision, it had a musical chair thing with the jockeys. So Frankie Dettori picks up this really good mount on Snowfall, who's a daughter of Deep Impact. So that will be fun to watch with him riding in tomorrow's Oaks. And I know he has a mount in the Derby. Jim Bolger has Max Swinney, who's a really interesting horse. And there was an interesting story the other day about some of the pedigree scientific research that Bolger uses, not just sire lines or anything else, but real deep genetic stuff. And they felt that Max Swinney would be the one of the two. He has two real good three-year-old colts to get the distance, so he will be in the race. And he's named after some Irish revolutionary, so I will probably be rooting for him.
Nice. All right. I do want to ask you, after the Hong Kong review, I do want to ask you about Andy Byer's visit yesterday and your Triple Crown thoughts. And, of course, you'll have analysis at Brisnet just Saturday or both days?
Just the Saturday. It should be up now.
Okay, cool. But we'll touch on the overall theme. But Andy's comments yesterday, I find surprising about the Triple Crown and changing it up, and I want to see what your thoughts are. But HKJC past week and this weekend.
All right, last Sunday we had the Lion Rock Trophy, a Group 3 going a mile, and Sky Darcy, 4-year-old, who had just won the BMW Hong Kong Derby, shortened back in distance, finished up very well because he took the lead, and then he was under severe pressure in the deep stretch, but somehow held on by a nose. Slow pace early, very fast late. They went 33.45, which is about par. And he'll be a real nice horse last year. The 4-year-old this year, I haven't been that sold on, but with improvement and normal development, that they should add to the roster next year of the group stake races. The big story Sunday was the last race of the day. David Hayes, who's had 6 debut winners at the meet already, sends out this horse named Naboo Attack. Goes off at 17-1. I read one story about him, about how big he was, and he was big. And it was a 6-furlong race. He's back in 8th early. He runs his last half mile in 43.6. Wins going away by a length and a quarter, 107.92. Third fastest of the season. The only faster were Wellington, who went on to be a Group 1 stakes winner, and the Chairman's Champion Sprint, which was a Group 1. That went faster. But otherwise, this is the third fastest, 1,200 meters off the layoff, Hong Kong debut. Now, he was not a first-time starter. He had raced in Australia. He weighs 1,360 pounds. And when you see him, he is all of that. So you watch him the race and you pick him up and he's obviously eating up ground. You're thinking Forgo, you're thinking Cox's Ridge, which most people don't remember as that big a horse, and just enormous. So Hayes has class 2 at his mercy because his rating got raised to 90, so he'll still be in class 2. He won't be 17-1 this time, but that's a emerging superstar. And the way Sha Tin runs their races, you know, they run one turn, 6, 7, 8, and 9 furlong races. So as big as he is, he doesn't have to worry about 2-turn races where he might get stuck in traffic or anything. But he was just visually impressive, on paper impressive, just wow, just spectacular. So he joins Courier Wonder and Fantastic Treasure and some of these really good horses that have developed this year. Yesterday at Happy Valley, we had 2 favorites out of the 9 races, both ridden by Zach Purton. Jerry Chow is he's out of the penalty box. He's in there a lot, apprentice rider. But he won the opener, 1,000 meter. Now, 1,000 meter at Happy Valley is a one-turn race. At Sha Tin, it's a straightaway. And he won from post 12 in a 12-horse field. Now, no one has done that all meet. But when I looked it up, there's a lot of horses that have won from 10 and 11 posts. So it was great that he was able to win from the 12, but it's not a total kiss of death, but it was the first time that it's happened all year. So Jerry Chow back. And here's my paperwork. Our buddy Matthew Kuhn on Sunday, $116 horse in race number 6.
It's unbelievable.
And yesterday at Happy Valley, $42.30 for Matthew Poon, who just still shows a flatbread profit over 2 years of racing.
It's just amazing.
It truly is. We've talked about it, and you keep thinking, well, that's anecdotal. You know, that's going to even itself out. No, it doesn't. He just keeps winning at huge prices. So we have racing Sunday night, Saturday evening, West Coast time, 12:45 East Coast time. 10 races, 8 on the turf, 2 all weather, no stake races this week, which is interesting because that'll guarantee you the big, gigantic field. There's only one race with less than a full gate. Now, we in America don't have access to all the pools. I think Canada does. So there is this gigantic $60 million carryover in the Triple Trio. And it'll go up to probably $90 million Hong Kong dollars, which is about $13 million U.S. dollars. It's quite a chunk of change. So hopefully someday we can bet into those pools. And that's a matter of our tow companies, you know, fixing things and getting compatible. But I think Canada can do it. So if you're able to bet in Canada, you live in Canada, you're looking at a
Tommy. Tommy.
I was gonna say I got Tommy.
The hammer. Get at it.
The program just came out at 6 o'clock this morning, so get to it. So they got that coming up Saturday night as well. So that's a look at the weekend. The only pick I have is race 6, all weather race, number 10, super fast. Ran pretty good in his all weather debut, then had a couple of middling turf efforts. Now he's back on the all weather. See if he can pull it off at a price. Race 6, number 10, super fast.
Excellent. Speaking of Tommy Massis, we're going to start Woodbine coverage next week. It looks like they could start as early as next week, certainly no later than a week from Monday. But Tommy is going to contribute to conversations and handicapping the Woodbine action.
Good.
Looking forward to that. Okay. It's been a few years since we've had some Woodbine spotlight, and I'm excited about it. Dick, to close out, any overall, you and Rich Eng and Gus Alonso all have analysis available for people at BrisNet for the, you know, the big cards, and here's the third leg of the Triple Crown, and it's a fabulous card, so I don't, you know, not asking you to reveal too much, but any overall Belmont thoughts and thoughts on the weekend?
You know, what I tried to do is not overthink the races. Some of them look obvious, and they might be obvious. Sometimes I'll look at something and I get enamored with something, and then the race is on and I'm like, what was I thinking about? So Saturday, I'm not saying it's chalky, but the dirt races kind of set up that way. So where I seem to get off the chalk parade was more obviously the turf races with bigger fields. And I think some real upset possibilities, because I heard a Nick before, and I've told you before how much respect I have for Nick's work. He didn't think domestic spending could lose. I have him fourth. I have one of the other many Chad Browns, Tribu Haven or whatever his name is, on top in that race. So I think the turf races, especially if there's that with the expected rain, it, you know, we should have a little bit of give to the ground, and the specter of someone getting loose on a lead and going unchallenged is a little bit less. So the turf races were pretty intriguing.
The one thing about Tribhuvan, did happen to notice yesterday when they drew for Monmouth for Saturday, he's cross-entered in the Monmouth Stakes. So, which came up great. They got a very nice field actually for the Monmouth, and of course, this is the race that they created years and years ago for Big Brown, and it ended up really growing, if you recall. But you've got Pixelate, Fame to Famous, Winter's Back for Pletcher, Devamani for Chad, Serve the King for Chad, and Tribhuvan cross-entered for Chad. Greg Sacco's got Ocean's Map. You got Corelli for Jonathan Thomas in here. This thing really, this is okay. The Monmouth Stakes goes as the nightcap on Saturday, the 12th.
Well, I just thought in the Manhattan, if he can run back to that Fort Marcy first start off the layoff and even show any kind of improvement, He's right there. And that was on firm turf when he ran 46 flat for 9 furlongs. But he has 2 wins on soft turf in France. So he's one of these horses that can run over any going. I love the pedigree being by Toronado. So that attracted me. We'll see where Chad ships him. Wouldn't be surprised if he goes to the Jersey Shore now.
FYI, keep that in mind, and then finally, Dick, your thoughts about what, I don't know if you heard Andy yesterday, his comments, but he he thinks that the time has come to rework the Triple Crown in terms of its scheduling, in terms of its everything. He's ready to shorten the Belmont. I think this all kind of came, you know, crystallized for him last year, and rightfully so. He said about the Preakness, he said, you know, you had the Philly beat the Derby winner, and it was thrilling, and, you know, we've got a system. I brought up the fact that we have a system that generally excludes Phillies right now unless, you know, there's a pronounced effort to run against the boys before the Classic season starts to accrue points. He feels that, you know, his big portion of this is the fact that, you know, these horses that used to run, you know, almost 110 buyers to win the Derby particularly, that, you know, it's been kind of few and far between since the last, let's call it 20 years. And if you push this thing back, you know, you give the horses, the three-year-olds, more time, you know, given the way horses are campaigned these days. So he's calling for a wholesale reevaluation of the Triple Crown.
Well, I'll agree with them in this sense, that for years we heard we got to fix the Triple Crown. We desperately need a Triple Crown. Wouldn't it be great if we had a Triple Crown? And then we had a Triple Crown in 2015 and 2018. And the end result was good TV ratings on those days, but not really much else as far as a general fan interest into the sport. So if it was something that would help overall interest, not my interest, not my historical, traditional, whatever, I'm all for it. So if there were a way of doing it, my fear is when you do it, you're taking the whole year. It's like the damage the Breeders' Cup did to fall racing, and is that going to damage the rest of the season for the three-year-olds? I don't know. I don't have an answer. I do think genetically asking a young horse to do something that he's not been trained to do kind of shows who has the right pedigrees, and that's why the Epsom Derby was at a mile and a half with an uphill finish, that it was something that you had to have something in your genes to accomplish it, and therefore they only wanted colts, they didn't want fillies in the race, they didn't want geldings in the race, they just want to prove who the best colt is of that crop. And that makes some logical sense to me. Are we at that point anymore? No. So if it helped, if it could get into some bonus system where there'd be a real good incentive to compete in all three races and not keep skipping the Preakness and stuff like that, yeah, I'd go along with it. I don't know what Andy specifically proposed, but yeah, I wouldn't be dead set against it like I have been in the past.
That seems to be. It's funny, you know, to have, you know, writers or you know, people involved, very heavily involved in the game, to have what you would think would have been, you know, very traditional viewpoints, and here's two, you and Andy, and I will say this: I am more malleable on the topic now than after last year than I had been.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's an interesting, in terms of moving things around, I mean, it would be difficult, given that there isn't a management overwrap of the Crown as an entity, I will say this: it feels like we are at least in a era or period where people are going to be willing to evaluate and consider many things to help the game, improve the game, manage the game in a responsible fashion, and, you know, for the benefit of the animal, for the benefit of, you know, the industry at large. So maybe the time's right for these kinds of discussions.
Do me one favor today.
Yeah.
if you see any of the stewards, ask them if the trainer of Carrick has been called in to explain the form reversal in the last race on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is the problem with simulcasting and watching it from your home and everything. If you're watching that race with other horse players, you're gonna get an earful.
It's funny. I discussed it with Gary because Gary ran second, and it's certainly drawing the ire and frustration of.
Oh, and hats off to Andy for saying what he said on the broadcast.
Yes, that's an interesting sidebar in itself. Dick, I appreciate it. Good luck today, tomorrow, Saturday, Sunday.
Yes, definitely.
And just remember, the money you win on Sunday will be just as valuable to you as money you might not win on Friday or Saturday. So. They're not gonna take away your horse player card if you get beat up on Saturday.
Yep. All right. Well, enjoy sunny Belmont at least on Saturday.
Yeah, we're gonna have to wait out. Monday, Tuesday. Wednesday were gorgeous, so we're just going to sweat this thing 24 hours, and like right now, for instance, right now the sky's lightened up again, and we have not had at this hour approaching whatever it is 10:30, we have not had nearly the rain that had been expected. So we're dodging it so far, and let's stay lucky. I wish it's too bad that the one frustration is it's too bad we didn't start at 1 o'clock today instead of having this twilight action that integrates with Churchill. Mm-hmm. But so be it. Dick, talk to you next
week. Thanks, Steve.
Dick Powell, everybody. Let's do this. Deja, let's take that halfway break here. So we'll chop up the show in two parts today. And coming up, Lenny Shulman is going to join us. Mike Welch. We'll visit with Papo, too. We'll get Papo's Friday thoughts. We'll look at the stakes with him. There is a Twitch tonight for Form to Win, formtowin.com. And, I should also mention, as we go to the break, when we come back, actually, I'll pull it up in front of me, because the Belmont Challenge contest, there's still time. You still got time to sign up and participate. Always good. There's also the regular Saturday contest. The little $300 contest is fun too. But you got the big Belmont Challenge here on the heels of Mondays and the Memorial Day weekend action at Lone Star. So the contest landscape continues. Oh, and by the way, probably by the end of the day today, I will put up the link for this weekend's. I promised you a Bic Four. And there will be a Bic Four and another $1,000 worth of prizes to the top finishers. And it's the same four as the $2 Pick Four. So you got two chances at it. the big online opportunity and chance to play the $2 Pick Four and then also play it as the Bic Four at the website. All right. So. I'll have more of that as soon as my website people will tell us that they threw the switch. But the same thing, you'll pick the four horses, and if more than four people hit the pick four, pick all four correctly, we'll do a drawing for the prizes, and if nobody picks four, it'll then be the dollars and cents of the winners, like it was Derby weekend. All right? So Bic Four is back. Take a break. Come back and have Lenny Shulman, Mike Welch, and more. At the races at Belmont. Back after this.
the latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Step on side to side. Body's gently moving. I let myself fly these times. Dance for miles and miles. Crowd's been slow.
We're back at the races, back to beautiful Belmont Park. It's a little less beautiful than it should be. Very overcast and kind of dank right now, but that's all right. We're dodging. Although it is, I can see kind of rainy mist actually enough ahead of me. So a little bit inclement. Racing starts at 3 o'clock. I have not actually gone to see if they've. Let me see if they've made any designation on in terms of the track. And I mean, it's early yet. You still obviously have got 4.5 hours before first post. So we'll see. Right now, we will hearken to a regular feature that. At around this time, in fact, at almost 10:30 on Thursday of Belmont Week, and I'm sitting here at the green table, with the Belmont festooned tablecloth, and very often for the longest time, Lenny Shulman would be to one side of me and Steve Askin on the lead up to Belmont, and they both have. Somewhat pulled back from active duty.